Imagine pulling a cake out of the oven, putting it directly into a deep freezer, and then just watching it continue to perfectly bake.
Right, which sounds completely absurd.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because in the physical world, dropping temperatures like that is supposed to break the rules of how things grow and change. I mean, the chemistry should stop, the batter shouldn't rise, the whole thing should just stall out.
Yeah, or turn into something completely unrecognizable.
Right. But today, we're looking at a piece of steel that just straight up refuses to obey that standard logic.
And it's a very natural assumption to make, really. We are heavily conditioned to believe that, extreme environments produce extreme or unpredictable deviations from the norm.
For sure.
And in the world of physical metallurgy, this exact premise has been a long-standing point of intense debate. Like, what actually happens when you force a structural transformation in a metal to occur in a thermal zone where it technically shouldn't even be possible?
And that is exactly our mission for you today on this custom-tailored deep dive. We're looking at a highly technical review authored by HKDH Padacia.
From Queen Mary University of London in the University of Cambridge, yeah.
Right. And this review is specifically discussing a recent paper by Liang et al., which was published in the Journal of Iron and Steel Research International in 2026.
It's a fascinating paper.
It really is. The core of this research is about pushing metal way past a specific thermal boundary to see if the underlying physical laws just snap. Specifically, we're exploring a structural change in steel known as the Bainite reaction.
Yeah, so to give you a bit of foundational context before we dive into the deep end, when you cool steel down, its internal crystal structure, like the way the atoms are actually stacked together, changes.
Okay.
Above a certain temperature, you might get a structure called bainite, which is highly desirable in engineering because it's incredibly tough.
Right, tough steel is good steel.
Exactly. But if you drop the temperature too fast and cross below a specific threshold known as the martensite start temperature, or M sub S, you typically trigger the formation of martensite instead.
And martensite is different from bainite.
Very. Martensite is much harder, but significantly more brittle. So the debate has always been, well, what happens to the kinetics of that bainite transformation? If we intentionally plunge the temperature down into the freezing, rigid territory of martensite.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the core question for this deep dive is essentially, do the thermodynamic rules of metallurgy fundamentally break
Yeah.
when we drop below that M sub S temperature?
Exactly.
Like, are we baking a cake in the freezer and getting complete chemical chaos, or do the atoms somehow still follow a script?
Well, the paper demonstrates something quite remarkable, actually. It shows that the thermodynamic rules governing the transformation remain completely resilient.
Really, completely.
Completely. The formation of bainite below the M sub S temperature is not fundamentally different from a thermodynamic perspective.
Wow.
Yeah, the physical laws still absolutely dictate the process, even in this extreme state of thermal undercooling.
I would assume that, forcing a metal into a state where it wants to become brittle martensite would just throw a wrench into the whole process. How do the rules even survive that?
To understand that, we really have to look at the mechanisms, specifically something called the incomplete reaction phenomenon.
The incomplete reaction phenomenon.
Yeah. So when bainite forms, it grows by what we call displacive transformation. Imagine the iron atoms moving cooperatively, almost like a highly disciplined military unit, shifting its formation all at once.
Instead of just wandering around individually.
Right, exactly. Now, as this bainite structure grows, it doesn't want the carbon atoms.
It just rejects them.
Yeah, it essentially evicts them, pushing the carbon out into the surrounding untransformed material, which we call the residual austenite.
So the bainite is kicking carbon out into the hallway, and the hallway is the austenite.
That's a good way to look at it.
But I'm guessing that hallway can't just fill up with carbon infinitely, right?
Right.
There has to be a limit.
You're on the right track, but it's actually a bit more complex than just running out of physical space. It's actually about energy.
Energy.
Yeah. The terminal carbon concentration of that residual austenite absolutely cannot exceed a thermodynamic barrier known as the T0 phase boundary limit.
The T0 phase boundary. I mean, that sounds intimidating. What does that actually mean for the atoms?
Well, think of free energy as a measure of nature's laziness.
Nature's laziness. I like that.
Right, because everything in the physical universe wants to reach a state of minimum energy, you know, the most stable, lazy state possible.
Sure.
The T0 boundary is the exact mathematical point where the free energy of the ferrite phase, which is the structural basis of our bainite, and the free energy of the austenite phase become completely identical.
Assuming they have the exact same chemical composition.
Exactly. Assuming identical composition.
Wait, so let me see if I have this right. When the carbon builds up in the austenite to a certain density, the energy states of the two different structures just equal out.
Yes.
And because there's no longer a lower energy state to chase like, the metal can't be any lazier. The transformation just gives up.
That is a very good way to visualize it. It acts as a universal physical speed limit.
The speed limit.
Okay. Once the carbon concentration hits that T0 limit, that equality in free energy means there is no longer any thermodynamic driving force.
So no energetic reward for the metal to keep transforming.
None at all. So the reaction stops. It remains incomplete. And what this new research proves is that this exact same thermodynamic speed limit applies flawlessly, even when you are operating way down below the martensite start temperature.
Wait, so even if we force the temperature down to a state where a different structure martensite normally starts forming, this T0 boundary acts like a universal physical speed limit that the carbon just cannot cross.
Exactly. The environment changed drastically, but the fundamental law governing the carbon did not flinch.
Which brings us to a massive problem, at least in my mind. Because it is one thing to draw a mathematical boundary on a whiteboard. But if you have this T0 limit on paper, how on earth do you track a carbon atom in a laboratory inside a piece of metal that is actively freezing into a hard martensite state?
It's incredibly difficult.
Like, how did Liang's team actually capture data inside that mess?
Well, it wasn't easy, and it required a highly specific, carefully calibrated high-strength alloy steel to prove it. They didn't just grab a standard piece of construction rebar.
What exactly was this metal made of then? Because if they're trying to prove a universal law under extreme stress, I imagine the recipe was pretty intense.
It was incredibly precise. By weight percentage, the matrix they engineered contained iron, naturally, with 0.25% carbon,
right,
1.68% silicon, 1.82% manganese.
Wow, they're really dialing it in.
Yeah, and 1.45% chromium, 0.27% nickel, and 0.054% vanadium.
That is quite the cocktail. Mm. I recognize iron and carbon, obviously, but why all the extra ingredients? Like, why the vanadium and silicon?
Every single element in that matrix is tuned to control the phase transformations. Silicon, for instance, is brilliant at preventing the carbon from clumping together to form carbides.
Oh, which forces the carbon to stay in the austenite.
Exactly. And the manganese, chromium, and nickel are there to tweak the hardenability and control exactly when and how the different structural phases initiate.
I see.
Now, for this very specific steel composition, the martensite start temperature, that M sub S point we've been talking about, is exactly 365 degrees Celsius.
Okay, so 365 degrees is the danger zone where the brittle martensite normally starts taking over.
Correct. So the researchers needed to force the bainite to form below that 365 degree mark.
Right.
To achieve this, they utilized a highly controlled two-step heat treatment. They deliberately supercooled the metal down to 300 degrees Celsius.
Whoa, they plunged it 65 degrees past the boundary?
Yep.
So at 300 degrees, martensite is actively forming immediately. It's a hostile environment.
It is deeply hostile. They intentionally generate a pre-existing martensitic matrix, but then they hold it there.
They just hold it at 300.
Yeah, and within that rigid, already forming martensite structure, they successfully generated carbide-free bainite.
That's wild.
They forced the bainite reaction to happen inside the crowded territory of the martensite. And then they tracked what happened to the carbon enrichment in the remaining parent austenite when the reaction progressed as far as it possibly could.
And did the data actually show a pattern? Or did the supercooling just make the carbon readings chaotic?
The data was stunningly consistent. They recorded 6 distinct data points for the system at these deeply supercooled temperatures.
Yep.
And remarkably, 2 of the measured parameters taken at 300 degrees Celsius superimpose identically.
They match perfectly.
It matched perfectly. But the real triumph was when they mapped this experimental data against thermodynamic models. They calculated the curves using MUCG46 with the AE3 prime curve representing perequilibrium.
Okay, hold on. You just dropped some heavy jargon on me. MUCG46 sounds like a secret government project, and perequilibrium sounds like a yoga pose. Help me out here.
Fair enough, fair enough. MUCG46 is essentially a highly robust, heavily verified thermodynamic modeling software.
Ah, okay. A software.
Yeah, it's a computational framework that material scientists use to predict exactly how atoms will behave and calculate those free energy curves we discussed earlier. It is the gold standard for predicting these
Got
boundaries.
it. The predictive math model and periequilibrium.
Periequilibrium is a fascinating state. At these low temperatures, around 300 degrees Celsius, the system doesn't have enough thermal energy for all the atoms to move around.
Because it's too cold.
Right. The heavy, sluggish atoms, like the iron or the chromium and nickel we mentioned, are essentially frozen in place. They cannot redistribute.
But the carbon can.
Yes. The carbon atoms are incredibly small and nimble. Periequilibrium is the state where only the carbon atoms are moving fast enough to reach an equilibrium state, while the heavier lattice atoms are trapped.
Wow. Okay, so only the carbon is moving.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, what Figure 2.1 Ullmann in the source material essentially proves is that the terminal carbon concentration of the austenite, even when trapped inside this freezing martensitic matrix where only carbon can move, perfectly aligns with the theoretical T0 phase boundary.
So the math holds up.
Flawlessly. The physical, messy laboratory data from this complex alloy flawlessly matches the theoretical mathematical models of MUCG46.
Here's where it gets really interesting, at least to me, as I try to visualize what's happening inside this steel.
Okay, let's hear it.
If we compare that pre-existing martensitic matrix to a dense frozen forest, the temperature drops, the martensite forms, and suddenly you have this rigid, crowded landscape.
Right?
Now, the new carbide-free bainite that starts growing inside it is like a new type of vine. I would think that forcing a vine to grow in a dark, crowded, frozen forest would fundamentally change the biology of how it grows.
You'd assume so.
But the data shows that this vine somehow still follows the exact same growth rules, that T0 limit, despite being forced to grow in a much colder, much more restricted environment. It doesn't break the rules. It just adapts to this space.
I really like that visualization. The fundamental rules of the forest remain exactly the same. The thermodynamic drive operates independently of the chaos around it.
That's so cool.
It is. However, since we've established that the fundamental rules don't change, we must now explore how the physical shape and scale of the metal change at a microscopic level.
Oh, because they have to change, right?
Right, because while the thermodynamic framework is unaltered, the structural dimensions scale drastically when you undercool the metal this much.
Yeah, because if the vines still follow the rules, but the forest is incredibly crowded and cold, the physical shape of the vines has to change. They can't just be massive and sprawling anymore.
Exactly.
What are the actual microstructural consequences of this low temperature undercooling?
The paper details a few major physical changes, and you actually just hit on the first one, a highly refined scale.
Smaller vines.
Smaller vines. The researchers observed that the physical size of the individual bainite plates systematically contracts as the operating temperature drops.
Okay.
This trend is also mirrored by a shrinking overall sheaf thickness. The actual architecture of the bainite becomes incredibly fine and miniature compared to bainite formed at higher temperatures.
That makes intuitive sense. But why exactly does the cold make them smaller? Does the cold just compress them physically?
It's less about physical compression and more about the atomic energy available to drive growth.
Back to energy.
Always back to energy. We talked about how the atoms move cooperatively in a displacive transformation. Well, pushing those atoms into new lattice structures still requires overcoming microscopic resistance.
Right.
At higher temperatures, the system has plenty of thermal energy, so the bainite plates can grow large and thick before the local resistance stops them.
They have momentum.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But when you drop the temperature way down to 300 degrees Celsius, the thermal energy plummets. The driving force is still there, governed by the T0 limit, but the atoms simply don't have the juice to sustain massive growth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the plates run out of energy and halt much sooner, resulting in a much finer, smaller structure.
So they just don't have the fuel for a long road trip, so they take short trips instead.
That's a great way to put it.
What happens to the austenite then, the hallways we talked about earlier where the carbon gets dumped?
That brings us to the second major consequence. A massive austenite volume reduction.
Massive reduction. Okay.
The total remaining volume fraction and the physical size of what we call blocky or film-type retained austenite are heavily reduced compared to processing the steel entirely above the M sub S point.
So the hallways are practically disappearing. Why is there so little of it left?
It's a result of a one-two punch. First, you have that initial burst of athermal martensite forming the moment you drop below 365 degrees.
Right, the danger zone.
Yeah, that violent structural change eats up a massive portion of the parent austenite right away. Then you have this lower temperature, very fine bainite growth happening in the spaces that are left.
Wow, so they're both just eating up the space.
Exactly. Between the immediate martensite and the subsequent bainite, they rapidly consume the bulk of the initial parent phase. There is simply very little physical room left for the austenite to exist.
So if we go back to our earlier analogy, the rooms in our structure are getting much, much smaller because the martensite and bainite just aggressively moved in.
Yes.
But the thermodynamic rules haven't changed, meaning the bainite is still rejecting its carbon into whatever austenite is left.
Right.
Does that mean the carbon atoms are now being crammed into these tiny, thin film hallways at incredibly high densities?
Yes, and the data proves it. That is the third microstructural consequence, carbon scaling.
Carbon scaling.
Because of the heavily reduced spatial presence of the austenite, the total localized carbon concentration within these remaining microscopic thin film networks increases dramatically.
I can imagine.
And again, tracking back to the resilience of the physical laws, this immense spike in carbon density tracks perfectly along the steep negative slope of the stable T0 thermodynamic curve.
That is just so satisfying.
Right. The physical space shrinks, the localized concentration spikes dramatically, but the mathematical curve holds perfectly true.
It's incredible how mathematical the physical world is when you zoom in enough. Like, it's not chaos at all. It's just geometry and chemistry perfectly adjusting to a smaller, colder box.
It is beautifully predictable. But, you know, we can't ignore the mechanical toll this takes on the material.
The toll.
Yeah, we have to consider what happens when you shrink that microscopic space and drastically increase that carbon density while forcing these transformations in a freezing environment.
Right.
Which leads us to the final microstructural consequence discussed in the paper dislocation densities.
Ah, the pressure cooker effect.
This raises an important question, really, about how temperature fundamentally limits a material's physical plasticity. You have to remember the environment we are operating in. We are well below the martensite start temperature. The material is much colder, and therefore the atomic lattice is vastly more rigid.
Because things are frozen in place.
Exactly. We say there is a very high mechanical resistance to plastic accommodation at these lower processing temperatures.
So the metal cannot easily flex or yield to accommodate the new structural changes happening inside it.
Right.
When the bainite tries to grow, the surrounding material fights back hard.
Precise. Well, it doesn't just fight back. It fundamentally scars the new structure.
Scars it.
Yeah. Because the surrounding matrix refuses to comfortably yield, the defect in dislocation density within the resulting bainitic ferrite matrix increases significantly.
Wow.
The internal structure becomes riddled with microscopic flaws and misalignments because it was forced to transform in an environment that refused to give it any breathing room.
So what does this all mean? To ground this concept, it's almost like, well, it's not like packing a suitcase. It's more like trying to repack a tightly stuffed suitcase in a freezing room where the fabric of the suitcase absolutely refuses to stretch.
I like that.
The fabric has high mechanical resistance. So what happens? You force it closed anyway, but you end up with a massive amount of wrinkles and stress lines permanently embedded in the fabric.
And those stress lines are the defects.
Right, the defects and dislocations permanently embedded in the bainitic ferrite matrix because it had to grow in a space that wouldn't accommodate it.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. The thermodynamics dictate that the transformation will happen up to a certain point. The T0 boundary ensures that.
Right.
But the low temperature dictates that the material will suffer immense internal mechanical stress to make it happen. The laws of physics force the change, but the rigid environment ensures that the resulting structure is fundamentally heavy with dislocations.
It is a phenomenal look at the invisible architecture of the physical world. For anyone listening right now who is fascinated by engineering, by how things are made, or just by how the universe operates at an atomic level, this deep dive shows us something really profound.
It really does.
It proves that fundamental thermodynamic laws hold beautifully true, even when we push materials into extreme, unfamiliar boundaries. For me, it prevents that feeling of information overload by reminding us that underneath the incredibly complex, mathematically dense world of metallurgy, there are resilient, predictable rules.
Absolutely.
We aren't just guessing when we forge steel. We are navigating a very strict set of physical laws that do not bend just because the temperature drops.
It truly is a testament to the predictive power of materials science. But, you know, it also leaves us with a fascinating path forward for engineering.
Oh, how so?
Well, if thermodynamic limits, like the T0 boundary, are strictly unbreakable, even when we actively manipulate temperature to drastically shrink molecular plates and intentionally spike those defect densities, could this precise manipulation of defects be the key to next-generation materials?
Wait, really? Using the flaws on purpose?
Yeah. Could forcing materials into these incredibly crowded, low-temperature, high-stress transformations allow us to create metals that are paradoxically stronger exactly because of their engineered microscopic flaws?
Oh, wow. It completely flips the idea of a defect on its head.
It really does.
Instead of a weakness or a failure, it becomes a highly engineered feature, born out of pushing physical laws to their absolute limit. That is an amazing thought to leave you with today. Thank you so much for joining us on this custom deep dive into the resilient laws of metallurgy. We hope you enjoyed exploring the boundaries of the physical world with us.
Thank you for joining the conversation. Keep questioning the boundaries of what is possible, and remember to stay insanely curious.